Well, 24 points down in the half. Had them all the way, right?
Wes, we did.
Whoa. So what does Wes Welker have to do with it?
Well, see, if he had caught that punt, it wouldn't have hit Tony Carter, and the Patriots wouldn't kick a short field goal to win the game in overtime. It would have been a tie.
So you're really pinning that on Wes Welker?
All on Wes.
Yeah, they'd have turned it over anyway.
Wow.
Well, that may be true, too.
Well, that was epic. I mean, any way you want to cut it, whether it's the wind or the turnovers or Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, that was an epic game.
Yeah, it was a really strange one, too. I think we all looked at the weather and we knew it was going to impact the game, but I think somehow we all underestimated just how much. And I have to think, you get 11 fumbles and 7 turnovers combined. You got to put some of that at least on the weather. Some shorthanded guys weren't able to hold on to the ball, and some other guys that aren't as shorthanded weren't able to hold on to the ball. Monte Ball.
That's true.
I tend to look at it from the other side. See, this is Patriots Football Weekly, so that's what I focus on.
I just look at the facts.
But, yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think we may all been guilty of underestimating just how much the weather was going to play a factor.
Well, I didn't. I tweeted out before
you
the
did.
Game
you
that,
did,
that, you know, if this wind keeps up, it'll come down to coaching decisions, and the Patriots have a clear advantage in that category, and it showed.
Well, I think they did, but I thought there were a lot of physical errors that weren't necessarily Jack Del Rio's fault. And I don't think much of him as an interim head coach, whatever you want to call him. And I actually think he made a good coaching decision when he took Trindon Holliday, his punt returner who bobbles the ball and is a heart attack back there, out and put Wes Welker in. It didn't work out. You know, Bill Belichick, everybody wants to talk about the decision to take the win in overtime as opposed to the ball. That's a good decision, but if they march right down the field, it doesn't look so good. So sometimes you make the right decision and it doesn't work out
sure.
for you.
Yeah.
Just like we overplay sometimes when a decision is made and it doesn't work out, and we put it all on the decision as if to say the players didn't have anything to do with it. You know, certainly there were a couple of moves in that game that I think taking the win had a lot of logic behind it, but ultimately it really didn't play that big of a factor. I mean, it came down to a punt hitting the ground and hitting somebody that really didn't have anything to do with the wind.
Right.
But the bottom line is, you know, Brady Manning, that battle, Brady won it. I mean, Manning could not get the ball down the field. You know, the Patriots did a good job on defense, and they played the pass. They allowed them to run a lot. But, you know, Aqib Talib said it. We had some help from the weather in shutting down Peyton Manning. He just couldn't, whether it's the ankle, the arm, the wind, some combination of the three.
Or the head.
Or whatever.
Or the head.
Yeah, might have gotten his head. He couldn't get the ball down the field, whereas Brady was making plays with and against the wind. He has a tighter spiral. He was able to deal with it. I mean, 344 yards is good on any day, but when technically you're going into a heavy wind half the day, that's impressive.
And even when you were throwing with the wind, it was a cross breeze.
Yep.
So it wasn't like, it just goes further. You have to adjust for the 10 yards that it's going to go left to right as
well.
Yeah,
and I got to think some of those long balls in overtime that we sort of questioned, you know, the third and shorts, and that they ended up drifting way out of bounds. I'll bet you that had a factor in it. Some of those were with the wind. Strange thing here, for both teams, I know the turnovers had a lot to do with it. Denver had 24 points going into the wind, and the Patriots had 21 going into the wind. You know, it's amazing the way it turned out like that. And I know they were greatly aided some of those touchdown drives by the turnovers, but you wouldn't have figured you'd put that many points on the board with that kind of a win.
Well, you know, in the first quarter, first half, when the Patriots fell behind 24-0, it's interesting because Bill Belichick said after the game that he was actually more upset with the way they played in the first half against Carolina than the way they played against Denver. And I think that goes to the point where, you know, sometimes those turnovers happen. It's not necessarily a team implosion. It's individuals making bad plays. But as a team, they were moving the ball.
And bad physical plays. And we talked about it a little bit earlier in the week on PFW in Progress, our radio show, that, you know, a guy can get beat. You know, Nate Solder can get beat by Von Miller. It's a Pro Bowl pass rusher. He beats him. It's a strip sack. It leads to a turnover. It's a bad play. But it's nothing, you know, not a mental mistake. You're not a mistake repeater. The things that get really Belichick annoyed. And that's what it was. It was just three bad physical plays. And even, you know, the blunt fumble, he took a big hit when he dropped the ball. He might have been, you know, knocked out on impact. So, you know, it was an unfortunate series of events. But I'm not sure it was anything as a coach you can say, well, I can fix that. They, you know, they didn't listen to the game plan. I had it drawn up a different way. It was just, you know, that's how it rolls sometimes.
They fumbled the ball in the first three possessions. Not ideal, obviously, but these things happen. Every once in a while, you just have one of those games. To their credit, they were able to come out and drive right down the field in that first drive of the second half. Brady hits the big one down the sideline to Gronkowski. That gets sort of the crowd going, the momentum going. And before you know it, it was, you know, to me, the striking thing, 17 minutes of game action to take the lead.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was incredible, basically in one quarter, because by 13 minutes left in the game, they had taken the lead.
17 minutes of game time it took them to overcome a 24-point deficit.
So I think we can safely say the offense is back. it's going to be productive from here on in, barring catastrophic injury. But what about Stephen Ridley? Because I really think that that's a big effect. I mean, you can use Vereen more, but that's not what you had planned when you started this season.
Well, we don't know what they had planned when they started the season. We know they're a committee team. And we know now that they have their weapons back in terms of spreading the offense out and having multiple receivers on the field, he may be best suited to be your quote-unquote lead back or whatever you want to call it. You know, it, sort of what
Vereen,
we saw.
Vereen.
Yeah, Vereen. Yeah. I mean, he started the year with a really good game. Basically, he's had three good games. That, you know, every time we see him, he's been productive and has been a key part of the offense, tied a career high 2 weeks in a row with 8 catches. And, you know, I do think he's best suited to be the guy, you know, whatever you want to call it, the Marshall Faulk, the Edgerrin James, who is the lead back in an offense that's sort of pass-based still. And Ridley, I think you need to make him a backup now. You just can't afford. We talk about it all the time. I think this is 8 different games they've had that were decided by a touchdown or less. You can't be giving the ball away, giving possessions away, giving the other team that extra possession that could lead to a loss.
So you think it's as simple as just inserting Vereen for Ridley?
He's your lead back now. He is your lead back, your starter, whatever you want to call it. He gets the bulk of the touches.
Obviously, the Patriots have dealt with a lot of injuries on defense this season, but that's opened up some opportunities for different players. And one we saw step up Sunday night is Jamie Collins, the second-round pick out of Southern Miss. He's been pretty quiet so far, hasn't had a lot of chances, but I thought he was pretty effective in those underneath zones, disrupting Wes Welker and Eric Decker, some of those shallow crossing routes that Denver likes to use. He's got some defensive back experience in his past, and I think that showed. He was knocking guys off their routes, and he tackled well. Good job by Jamie Collins stepping up. Injuries are starting to become a problem on the offensive line as well. Marcus Cannon was already subbing in for Sebastian Vollmer, and then he went out with an ankle injury, and that opened up an opportunity for Will Smietek. And this is a guy who's been a veteran. He's started. He has starting experience in the league. He's played some guard for the Patriots already. Now he steps in at right tackle, and I thought he really solidified things. The second half, the pressure the Broncos were getting in the first half kind of disappeared a little bit. I thought Smietek did a nice job sort of stemming the tide, and he might need to depending on how long Cannon is out. My final point this week is one that I honestly have no idea about. It has to do with the offense and has to do with receiver Kembrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson, the two rookies. We've seen them sort of alternate roles each week. One week you see Dobson make a few plays, the next week it's Tompkins. And when the other guy is out there, one guy doesn't really get any playing time at all. This week, Dobson started, played in the first half, didn't get any balls thrown his way, and then Tompkins came in and really contributed in the second half. I really don't have an explanation for this, but it seems like Bill Belichick right now is focused on having one of these guys be part of the game plan, while the other guy is really a non-factor. Something to keep an eye on going forward.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
I've been covering you your whole career and didn't know your nickname was Meat. Where does that come from?
Fresh cut green beans and you wrap it in bacon.
Morning Meeting is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Putnam Investments, a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years. Images of the Week, brought to you by Jack Daniels. Please drink responsibly.
Images of the Week this week shows that it was a complete team effort. This first one is Jamie Collins breaking up Wes Welker. Here's Julian Edelman with the first of his 2 touchdown catches. Finally, a name you don't hear a lot of, Nate Ebner. Here he is covering up that muff punt, and of course, that led to Steven Gostkowski's game-winning field goal.
Player Perspective is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Joining me now in the Patriots locker rooms, kicker Steven Gostkowski, and normally in an interview like this, coming off a game-winning kick, we would start there, but I'm going in a different direction. Because when I talked to Shane Vereen post-game, describing the end of the game, he said the ball took a nice bounce, and then Meat split the uprights. I feel a little embarrassed to say I've been covering you your whole career and didn't know your nickname was Meat. Where does that come from?
Well, Josh Miller gave it to my rookie year since I played baseball in college, from the movie Bull Durham, the pitcher, the rookie pitcher they called Meat. So I pitched in college, and Josh Miller started calling me Meat, and then Brady and Vrabel and Bruschi and all those guys started calling me that. So I really had no choice but to be called that, and it kind of stuck. So
Talk to me about that final kick and what the feeling is like for a kicker in overtime to be able to control the game, end the game, and walk off with a win.
You know, it's pretty cool. I mean, that's what you practice for, and, you know, you're only as good as your opportunities, and when you get the opportunities, you want to take advantage of them. And I was just fortunate to have the opportunity. You know, we get a good bounce on the punt. And, you know, you wanted the opportunity at the end of the game. We didn't get it, and, you know, a couple exchanges in overtime, you're like, oh darn, you know, it might go down as a tie. And you hate to not be able to have a chance when it looks like you had a chance. And just executing and going out there and making the kick, it feels good. And that just, you know, the thousands of repetitions that can get monotonous and boring, and keeping your focus and keeping your concentration through those dull times where you've kicked, you know, your thousandth kick of the year, you know, all that stuff pays off when, you know, when you get one play and you get to come through for the team. It's pretty fun. I mean, I didn't treat it any different than any other kick, but then, you know, after the game, you come back and you're like, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Now the important stuff. It's Thanksgiving week. A, how much does that affect you as a football player who's such a creature of habit when you have this holiday midweek that obviously you want to be with family and you want to spend some time? And then B, what do you like to eat when you get down for dinner there?
Well, I'm going to eat everything. Turkey, ham, sweet potato, casserole, green bean trees, homemade bread.
Green bean trees?
Yeah, it's like
fresh
cut green beans, and you wrap it in bacon and put Italian dressing on it, and then put it in the oven and bake them. They're really good.
So you found a way to make green beans sound good.
Yes, they're actually really good. You know, pumpkin pilot stuff. And no, I mean, I've been doing this long enough to where stuff doesn't get to me like it used to. And I've got two kids now, and my life is a circus no matter what. So I'm always dealing with stuff on the fly. So things like that don't bother me anymore.
When you're talking about matchups and you're talking about the Houston Texans, it begins with one guy. Reigning Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt, seems to be the only guy in Houston who is still giving effort, still making plays, who still cares. And it shows, leads the defense in virtually every category. He's a defensive end, but he leads them in tackles. Obviously has 9.5 sacks, putting up numbers similar to what he did a year ago, winning Defensive Player of the Year, but because the team stinks, no one's noticing. This Houston team looks a little different when you delve into the statistics. Number one on defense, but not winning a lot of games because the offense is 30th in points scored, 30th in point differential, 30th in turnovers. This is a Houston team that is not very good in all the things that allow you to lose games. Turnovers, giving up a lot of points, it's what they do. 24 or more points in 7 of the last 10 games. Each week, we look at the matchup with the quarterback. This week, it's a little different. Matt Schaub was formerly the franchise quarterback in Houston, a guy who led the NFL in passing not too long ago, but he lost his job. Now it's former practice squatter Case Keenum. The switch has led to a few different things. None of them wins, still 9 losses in a row, depending on the quarterback. But it has led to fewer interceptions and more sacks, and that means it could be another big day for Chandler Jones. He's recorded at least 1 sack in 6 of the last 7 games. Case Keenum sacked 13 times in limited playing time. Sounds like a recipe for pass rush success.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
This isn't the cheese line in the Soviet Union where everybody gets one slice of cheese. You had your opportunity to win more cheese. You didn't take it.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Ace Ticket, the official travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Around the NFL, brought to you by Nissan.
Did you hear the one about Bon Jovi buying the Bills? If he does, he'll be living on a buffalo wing and a prayer. But seriously, when those things happen, usually there's a little truth to it. And I can imagine that somebody from Bon Jovi's side kind of floated it out there to see what the public reaction would be. But, you know, there's probably little chance. Now, the rumor also has it him moving the team to Toronto, which makes sense. But let's look at it this way. Bon Jovi's worth about $287 million. The current price for a football team, even the Bills, has to start at $500 million. Now, you have to build a stadium in Toronto. We know that's over $1 billion. So Bon Jovi's going to need some pretty serious partners to go in on it with him, or some serious help from the city of Toronto. Hey, Rob Ford, are you listening?
15 years ago, I came to work for the Patriots, and a lot has changed. Obviously, I had a lot more hair then, you know, less weight around here. But Pete Carroll was here as the Patriots coach, and he's always been one of my favorite guys. But one inescapable fact about Pete is he's the ultimate player's coach, and the players take advantage. At USC, Reggie Bush ran all over him, ended up getting him on probation before Pete got out of town. Now up at Seattle, you look, the same thing is happening. It looks like the entire team is on PEDs. Last year it was Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner. This year it looks like Browner's going to get popped again for a whole year. And his backup, Walter Thurman, he's going to get suspended as well. Pete Carroll, great guy, pretty good defensive coach, absolutely no control of his players.
A week ago at this time, I was very critical of left tackle from the Redskins, Trent Williams, for being a little soft. Well, I finally found somebody softer and more sensitive than Williams. It's the guy he's protecting, RG3. You may have heard the report this week. According to NFL Network, RG3, when he was at Baylor, asked the coaches not to play his bad plays in team meetings, full team meetings. And the Baylor coaches agreed. Well, he tried to do the same thing with Mike Shanahan. Don't show my bad plays in front of the whole team. It's not fair. Only Shanahan, being, you know, an actual NFL coach, refused. RG3, I don't know what you are thinking. Why should no one else see your bad plays? And why should everybody have to watch the rest of your team's bad plays? It's called football. Everybody does some good things. Everybody does some bad things. The one thing we've learned about you is, while the Patriots have a quarterback who is as cool as the other side of the pillow, you're as soft as the entire pillow.
Trash Talk. Brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter dumpster in a bag can take it on.
The Patriots and Broncos nearly played to a tie on Sunday, which got us to thinking, are ties un-American?
For our listeners and me too, can you explain what that means? I don't understand what it means that ties are un-American.
You don't have to take it so super literally.
Ties are communism. I guess I like communism.
We have games here in this country. And we like to have a winner.
Right.
A winner and a loser, not a tie.
Even if you didn't earn the winner or a tie. I mean, you just go to a shootout.
You just go to a shootout in hockey. Find a way to
win. It's nothing like real hockey.
We should
have a field goal kicking contest at the end of football games, right?
We want resolution.
Those little golf carts with the powdered footballs and Brady and Manning would just throw them and whoever gets more points.
Listen.
You play a full five quarters of football. If a winner has not been decided by then, a tie is fine. You both have the opportunity to win. We're not giving anything away. This isn't the cheese line in the Soviet Union where everybody gets one slice of cheese. You had your opportunity to win more cheese. You didn't take it.
No, I'm not taking the cheese. I'm not taking the cheese on that nonsense. Listen, I think that we need to have winners and losers. I understand that football is difficult because it's such a physical game and the toll of having to play more than five quarters is different than the other sports. I get that. But you only play 16 games. You need to find a way to get a winner at the end of the game.
Okay, so you want some gimmick at the end of a game.
No, I don't want a gimmick. I'll
just
keep playing
forever.
Until someone scores.
Oh, that's great for injuries. Neither team will be able to play next week.
But it's okay if they get hurt in the playoffs, because that's a playoff game.
It's a regular game.
It was kind of important.
It's a game. You have to finish the game. No matter what, you have to finish it without a gimmick. And if the game ends,
I don't want a gimmick.
If the clock goes 3, 2, 1, 0, and you don't have a winner at the end of overtime, it's a tie. It's okay.
Okay, so if
there's
it happens in the playoffs, we'll
it's
just
not
let them
American,
move on.
It's just
right?
going to be a tie.
Denver didn't really lose to Baltimore last year because at the end of five quarters, it was tied after
all. Well, obviously, it's different in the postseason. You have to have a winner and a loser, or else you can't move on. You can't have two teams play the next week.
Right.
Wouldn't
so
be fair if the Patriots had to play both the Broncos and the Ravens.
We know that ties don't happen all that often, right? Ties are
almost
pretty infrequent.
Almost had two on Sunday.
But we had four,
almost had
but
two
we've
on
had
Sunday.
Four since 2000. So they don't happen very often. So why can't you just play it out? For four times that it happened, how much more damage are you going to do?
In this day and age of
four
concussions
games to let them play
safety,
a little bit more.
We're just going to let them play forever. Because ties are un-American.
Play until you get a winner.
You know what's un-American? Getting people hurt for no reason. That's un-American.
Okay, so it's okay if you get hurt within the five quarters, but if it slips over into the sixth, it becomes a hazard.
What if it slips into the seventh or the eighth? Where's the line? Where are ties okay? When do ties become American? What's the time frame? 90
never,
minutes?
Andy. You're starting to get it now. They're never American. We want a winner.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Nissan. Choose Nissan today for great offers on our most innovative lineup ever. Shop at ChooseNissan.com. New England Football Night is brought to you by AT&T. Rethink possible. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Roach Brothers Tasty Tailgating, official tailgate partner of New England Football Night. Read and React, brought to you in part by Yokohama, engineering the most advanced tires on the road for nearly a century. Yokohama, technology drives better tires.
All right, it's question time here in PFW, but first, the Wilson Hart Power Index.
You know you've been waiting.
Oh, I've been waiting.
I have been.
Well, not a lot of changes up near the top, actually. Seahawks remain one, Saints two, Chiefs three, Panthers four, Patriots five. Patriots don't change. Broncos did drop down a couple spots after the loss. Actually, things are really getting settled. You rarely see a team move up more than one or two spots in a given week because, obviously, sort of the cumulative effect of the season. Down the bottom, Jacksonville, last 32nd. Interesting, 28th, the Atlanta Falcons, the first team that was eliminated from postseason contention.
All right, let's get to the questions. This first one comes from Tim Adams, and he says, do you think it's possible that Dane Fletcher gets the start Sunday over Dante Hightower? He played great against Denver.
I do. And, well, first of all, I'm not sure he played great. They gave up 280 yards on the ground. That was pretty evenly balanced first and second half. So great, great is a strong word. But I believe that Dante Hightower got a little nicked up on a screen pass late in the first half. Was that long one, like 26 yards. He chased it down, came up limping, kind of flexing his leg. Stayed in the game for a couple more plays, but then didn't play the rest of the way. I think he got a little banged up. So I don't think that was just a coaching decision. I think health was an issue there, and that may be an issue coming this week.
So if Fletcher does play, it's not necessarily, we can't make the conclusion that it's based on performance.
No, I know a lot of people are down on Dante Hightower and sort of what he's done in his second season, but I wouldn't assume if he's not on the field that it is simply a coaching move.
Okay.
Health is an issue.
All right. Jesse M. says, where in the world is Danny Amendola? He had a good game in Pittsburgh, but his numbers have been quite pedestrian and is being outshined by Edelman. Please offer insight. Paul Perillo.
Well, I think this is another one that has to do with health. I think that it's remarkable that he's even on the field dealing with some of the stuff that we've heard about him dealing with that groin that I was totally torn, way back when, first week of the season. So, to me, his production is unquestionably down. You can't get around. I think he had three catches for 17 yards. He's got more explosiveness than that. He's not a guy that's going to be getting you, less than 10, less than, 8 yards a catch. He's got more than that. To me, he can't get separation right now. He's not getting open, and that's got to be related to his health.
So you're questioning those reports at the time that said the bone, the muscle actually tore from the bone, and that was a good thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I never really figured out how that could be a good thing.
Man, I just think of chicken wings. When you snap them open,
I think
that's
it might
good.
Be one of those things where
I don't think
it's
anyone
something
said
that
it was
he
a good thing.
Play
it just said of all the scenarios, that was...
Yeah, well, I think all scenarios led from that point to him not having the kind of year you'd like.
All
to
right. Have. Okay, well, that's it for this week's questions. Every week, send them to AskPFW@patriots.com.